You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahiahi marie, tēnā koutou kato, ko mea toka ingoa.
Ko sofia toku ingoa, no mai hare mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora mea, how are you this week?
I'm good, I'm feeling cozy.
Good, you look cozy.
I know, I'm wearing a cozy jumper, everyone's been like, great
commenting
jumper.
On it. Yeah, great jumper, you look so snug.
Oh, thanks, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm feeling the snug weather is incoming.
Yeah.
We've got a weekend of being in bed.
Yeah, no, I feel it too.
Clone of it all.
I know.
Stay
scary.
Safe.
Yeah.
But we have a lovely show to get you through your Friday afternoon. Maya, what have we got today?
Yeah, I caught up with Rosa Ellison about her current show on at Melanie Roger Gallery, Veradita. So what have you got?
And I caught up with director of Grace Aotearoa about their recent move from Pitt Street to Rationalist House on Simon Street, as well as their current joint exhibition showing Aotearangi Anderson and Georgia Tikiputini Douglas Hood, Mo Ahua.
Here aha of Fakara, we would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patsahi mai, you can text us on 5395-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5
Also, after the show, koe e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō hei pakihere rokiroki maronga i te pai tokutoku o Irirangi Poho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Oh, that's a good art!
Grace Aotearoa is a Tamaki-based gallery which specialises in the representation of early career artists within Aotearoa. Directed by Emil Sheffman, the gallery has recently relocated from its former Pitt Street home into Simon Street's historic Rationalist House. A building rich with history, Rationalist House has been owned by the New Zealand Association of Rationalists and Humanists since 1960, having been home to the association's library, an infamous jazz club, the Society for Closer Relations with the USSR, and for many years the Socialist Party. As a gallery with a reputation for championing younger emerging artists, it feels apt that Grace now sits between AUT, Wycliffe and Elam at the heart of fine arts education in Tamaki. I caught up with gallery director Emil Sheffman about the move, as well as their current joint exhibition showing Atarangi Anderson and Georgia Tikaputini, Douglas Hood, Mo Ahua. Here is the interview now.
Thanks, Sophia. It's nice to be here. Yeah, my name is Emil Sheffman, and I have a background in education and arts writing. It's kind of where I did most of my training in my 20s. And now I am the director of a gallery called Grace Aotearoa in full. And we were previously on Pitt Street for 2 years, but we've just moved to a new site in Rationalist House, just up from the University of Auckland. Well, between all the universities,
exactly.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, it feels quite fitting that you guys have moved into Rationalist House. I mean, Grace has kind of always had a reputation for championing younger emerging artists, so it feels quite apt that you have moved to sit in between AUT, Elam and Wycliffe as kind of the heart of fine arts education in Tamaki. Talk to me a little bit about the move and I guess this decision to relocate here.
Yeah, totally. I'm really delighted with the position of the gallery in between those three art schools, and as you say, it's like it's the heart of arts education in Tamaki, possibly Aotearoa, really. And whilst I would love to say that that was all to plan, that was blind luck, because finding a building that we could work with that would understand the kaupapa of Grace and provide us like a framework in terms of a lease arrangement that was workable is really hard. Anyone who's done that, you know, commercial lease search in Tamaki in recent years will know how hard it is. But we struck up a really immediate rapport with the New Zealand Association of Rationalists and Humanists, who still own Rationalist House. And yeah, we progressed really quickly to a lease agreement for a long time, actually, which is exciting for me because I just really want to do the work. I love running that gallery. It's a dream job for me. And yeah, in terms of the proximity to those art schools, that was just real luck. And as you say, like the gallery does have a specific orientation towards early career practice, and we're quite clear about that. We have two kind of guiding principles, early career practice and a relationship to Aotearoa New Zealand. So being where we are, having that relationship to new generations of artists coming through, it's perfect.
Mm, for sure. I guess a move out of necessity and a bit of luck, but has kind of grown to be more and more meaningful as you've kind of moved along with the move.
Totally. Yeah. It's felt really, you know, it's been about a 6-month pipeline to get to this point of opening from that first conversation with the rationalists. But every point has felt really right. And, you know, I sit there in the mornings now and I'm just like, oh, here it is. This is where I do my work. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the beginning of something.
Mm, a beautiful view onto Elim as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's,
yeah.
It looks down on the rooftops of Elim.
Cool.
All three of them or whatever. And it's also got a sea view. You can see the Waitemata just in the distance.
Perfect.
Which is really great.
Dream office view.
It's, yeah, I'm pinching myself. Like, it's crazy. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it, I guess, a little bit there in terms of the New Zealand Association for Rationalists.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit of a mouthful.
Can I repeat it?
Yeah, please.
The New Zealand Association of Rationalists and Humanists.
Those
NZARH.
Guys. Yeah, I guess with them, there is quite a rich history behind the building. Mm. Would you be able to speak, I guess, a little bit to that? And I don't know why that appeals to you as well with the space.
Mm, totally. It does have a really beautiful history. The building was constructed or opened in 1912. And it was it began its life as the home of a doctor and his family and also the place of their medical practice. So doctor's offices were downstairs and family home was upstairs.
Mm.
They sold it in the 1960s, and I don't think they were paying much attention to the sale because the relatively devout doctor was appalled when the you know, Association of Atheists purchased the house in the early 60s. And they have owned it ever since. So they've owned it since the early 60s, and they've had an incredible array of tenants in there. They've had like a really notorious jazz club in the basement. They were a host to the offices for the New Zealand Socialist Party for a long time. And they even had a little office for the, I think it's called the Office of Closer Relations to the USSR, which
wow.
is essentially like advocating for like, alignment with the Soviet Union.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And like the space that we moved into, was the Rationalist Library, and they very generously have relocated that to the basement. So it's still there, and you know, if you're curious, go check it out. It's beautiful. I think it's like I don't know, but I understand. I think it's one of the like kind of most significant collections of its kind in this part of the world.
Mm.
And yeah, so we're in the former library of the Rationalists.
Wow, crazy story behind the space.
Yeah.
A lot happened there.
It's been funny for me because a lot of people have been, you know, giving me their feedback saying, oh, fancy. Oh, looks fancy. I'm like, surely buzzy, right? Like,
yeah.
Surely buzzy.
I think buzzy is the perfect word for it. You're telling me these things. I'm like, what? This place is nuts. But I think that's kind of awesome.
Mm.
You've moved in, of course, with Bruce, who are your old neighbors back in on Pitt Street as well. It feels quite nice because I feel like you've kind of had this relationship with them and I guess the other businesses around the area that's felt really strong in terms of its community. Does it feel like for you guys there's kind of a joint relationship in bringing those spaces to Rationalist House and maybe a joint vision there as well?
Totally. It was a nice bit of symmetry or reciprocity because Tom Hinton of Bruce Tattoo Studio, he set me up with the lease at Pitt Street, which was our first site.
Mm.
And then, you know, I was kind of leading the efforts and discovered this site at Rationalist House and I brought them in.
Mm.
And so there was a nice sort of parallel relationship in terms of how these sites came to be. And yeah, I mean, Tom and Maddie, they're among my best friends. And yeah, it's such a pleasure to share the building with them. I think for me, I'm very privileged to be part of like a small community of businesses, small businesses, artisanal businesses that really help each other out. And there's a lot of kind of shared ownership between them. And that sense of mutual support and kind of cooperative methodology is really, maybe it comes back to training in an arts context and having artists run spaces in my background as well. It's it's just how it's the right way to do things. It feels intuitive.
Mm, for sure. I think what's really exciting too is this is a much larger space than where you're working in on Pitt Street. And I feel like there's kind of a lot of places you can go and experiment with that. And that's really exciting in terms of your curation output as well. What's kind of really making you feel inspired or excited about the prospect of working with that larger space as well?
Yeah, it is exciting. The previous space, for anyone who knew it, was really small. It was like 4 by 4 meters, and was really just like a window box.
Mm.
Beautiful space, really nice, but quite well suited to solo shows or two-person shows. Like I never really packed it out. I was just always quite restrained with it because I just felt like that was what was best for the space.
Mm.
But this space is really different. You know, it's 3 rooms plus a balcony, and it's got a lot of architectural detail. It's got a lot of things to respond to, and it's got a really sweet and interesting footprint. You know, I think it's one that artists will have to be quite awake to in terms of responding and installing work in.
Mm.
But from my point of view as a curator, you know, it's a funny word, but I guess that is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to, you know, look at group shows in a different way or bring more people in or be more ambitious with solo shows.
Mm. Do you think maybe with that, what might come, I guess, working in such a special space, I guess with these more kind of historical quirks to it as well, some more kind of site-responsive shows as well, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that has been emerging in conversations with artists in the sort of coming year.
Mm.
Yeah, more details to follow.
Big things coming.
Yeah, hopefully.
I also wanted to touch on you've opened the space with a new joint exhibition by Aotearangi Anderson and Georgia Tikaputini, Douglas Hood, Moahua. Would you like to speak a little bit to these artists and the show?
Yeah, so Aotearangi Anderson and Georgia Tikaputini, Douglas Hood, both incredible artists at the beginning of their practice, really, which is, again, our focus. And they both had, if not their first show, one of their first shows with Grace in the last few years.
Mm.
So it's a really nice moment. This is actually, I think it's almost the first time that I'm re-showing an artist, you know.
Mm.
So we're entering a new phase,
mm.
really. We're starting to delve deeper into the practices. And for me, I just felt like Aotearangi and Georgia had a really interesting conversation between their works, which I think, you know, put simply could be a relationship to sort of whenua, could be, yeah, sort of really responsive and also innovative language within Te Ao Māori.
Mm.
But I also just think they'd get along. That was a sense I had, you know, and I was pleasantly surprised, you know, that they just really found each other and really enjoyed the dialogue of developing the show together. And I guess as I go forward, I hope to find more moments where I can create like meaningful points of connection within the Grace community.
Mm.
And meaningful points of connection between the kind of work that the gallery supports.
Mm, for sure. Was there kind of any conscious decision behind opening the new space with this show in particular, or what I guess was important for you in opening this space?
Yeah, I really just put forward the show for our first show because I thought it would be a banger. I thought it would be really good. And yeah, I please encourage everyone to come see Mo Ahoa, which is, yeah, it's a beautiful show. They've really done something really delicate and brave and bold. And yeah, I mean, I don't think there is a particular reason why it was chosen first. We always have really long lead times for projects at Grace. Like I started conversation towards that exhibition probably 18 months ago or something with both artists. So they've had a long time to develop it and think about it. So by the time it came around, it was really ready, which is great.
Mm.
And I think we're starting to, as a gallery, get a little more mature in terms of not scrambling at the finish line. And yeah, I do think the gallery, you know, in particular the program this year, has a really strong presence of wahine Māori artists, and that's great. Other artists appearing in the program this year, Anahita Jade and Java Bentley, a few others as well. So maybe we're starting as we mean to continue, but nothing in particular.
Just wanted to start it with a banger.
Yeah, just start it with a banger.
Exactly. Did you have anything else you'd like to add before you wrap up?
Really just big invitation to everyone listening, because one thing that's amazing about galleries is that they are usually free. They should be free. And, you know, I know that commercial galleries, dealer galleries, they can seem really intimidating. They can seem just sort of places that don't belong to you when you walk past them. Mm. But actually, you know, their doors are open and you'll usually find that the gallerists and all the people minding them are really keen to connect and share the work and tell stories. And so, yeah, just encourage you to come and visit Grace. We're open Fridays and Saturdays, 11 to 4, and by appointment. But yeah, very keen to see anyone who's curious about what's happening in that building.
That was director of Grace Aotearoa speaking to me about the gallery's recent move to Rationalist House on Simon Street, Emil Scheffman. Their current joint exhibition showing Aotearangi Anderson and Georgia Tekeputini, Douglas Hood, Mo Ahua is on now until the 9th of May. The gallery is open Fridays and Saturdays, 11 by 4 or by appointment.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
We'll be right back shortly. This is Tomorrow's Perfect by Mark William Lewis. You're listening to BFM.
Sense.
What can I get for you?
Yeah, can I grab a funky wasp?
Smooth or seedy?
Just how it comes is fine.
Son of a bitch.
So quite a complicated drink then.
What? Yeah, I'm gonna be 37.50, mate. Actually, just make it 37, because I like your attitude.
Cocktail Corner, 5:30 every Thursday on 95 BFM Drive. Thanks to the Hollywood Avondale.
I believe in like the solar system. I believe in space. I really do believe in space.
Spaced Out. Josh Aoraki from Auckland Stardome Observatory and Planetarium talks everything spacey on Spaced Out. 4:40 every other Tuesday. Crisp biscuits and fresh vegetables every Tuesday from 7 p.m. Replayed 4 a.m. Wednesday and always online at 95bfm.com. Check it.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
Rosa Ellison is a Pōnaki-based artist primarily working amongst a painting practice, producing beautiful oil paintings on canvas that are heavily informed by the natural world. Her current show on at Melanie Roger Gallery, Viriditas, showcases a stunning series of paintings that continues in Ellison's exploration of the natural world. The title of the show itself, Viriditas, refers to a concept coined by 12th century German mystic Hildegard von Bingen. The word refers to a kind of greenness, a vitality and life force that inhibits all living things, like a sap that flows through the natural world, embodying all things with a kind of liveliness, in turn reimagining the divine as not something that sits above nature, but rather within nature. The works themselves lean into this exploration of Viriditas, taking on this enriched green color palette that flows between works to create a visual landscape of greenness, slipping in between abstraction and figuration, with imagery of snakes, birds, plants, mushrooms, and human bodies, both arising and slipping back into the work itself, resulting in a luminous exhibition that pulls viewers into a space of liveliness that re-centers nature and our ecological system. I caught up with Rosa about the show as well as her overall practice.
My name's Rosa Ellison. I'm an artist living in Pōnaki currently. Yeah, I grew up on a farm in North Canterbury, later went to Ilam and Christchurch, and then spent a while in London, and now I'm in Pōnaki. Yeah.
Wonderful. And a little bit about your overall painting practice.
I'd say it like nearly always oil paint, although recently I've been dabbling with some printmaking, recently some ceramics, yeah. So I'm branching out a bit, and my oil paintings are always going back and forth between abstraction and figuration. So I think this recent show is quite on the border there between the two.
Yeah, your current exhibition on at Melanie Roger Gallery, Viriditas, presents a beautiful series of paintings that pull viewers into this vibrant green landscape of the natural world. I wanted to start this conversation by speaking a little bit to the title of the show, which is a concept coined by 12th century mystic nun Hildegard von Bingen. Do you want to speak a little bit more to this concept and kind of like what drew you into that world?
Yeah, well, it's a really difficult word to define, but I think it really opens up a lot of possibilities that might help people like enter the paintings. It's a very spiritual word, and it's to do with greenness. It can also be like life force energy, or I like to think of it as sap, you know, like the liquid that moves through all of plants.
Yeah.
And it has consciousness as well. And all of those things just like resonated a lot with me and inspired me to make a series of paintings that's like confined by a green color scheme. Yeah.
Yeah. What led you to Hildegard? Because this is she's a mystic nun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of soul searching. I like grew up going to church and then as a typical teenager kind of rejected all that and thought it was all fake. And then, you know, through a bunch of personal crises, found myself like turning to prayer and things like that. And Hildegard was this character that was a nun with mystical visions, and I found her spirituality so exciting because it expanded into music, composition and painting. And she was a religious person, but not like in the boring, dusty sense that we often associate church with, but it was really exciting to read about and to see her paintings and listen to her music.
And with this kind of research on Hildegard and this word, what does this kind of concept and theory offer you in your creative practice? Like, how do these ideas find themselves showing up within the work itself through that making process of the show?
I have in the past struggled with titles because I can feel they narrow down the experience of a painting. So I wanted an opening instead. For anyone that doesn't know, Hildegard invented a language called lingua ignota, which was spoken between nuns and nobody else knew it. So I think this word came from that secret language.
Did you feel like it helped, guide your making process? And
I think it's made, like when I'm creating a painting, it's a very intuitive process, and I think that the meaning and language comes afterwards when I look back on a series, and it can tell me so many things, but it can help me understand myself and what I'm going through, and maybe what I've absorbed from the world, all these phallic and yonic forms that have shown up, and I'm like, what does all this mean? But these like motifs that keep repeating, like there's a snake and a mushroom and the wound shape, which also looks like a vagina. It's just trying to find a framework for understanding all those things, and I think it comes back to a spiritual reflection on my work.
I was gonna mention that your paintings have this beautiful nature of slipping between abstraction and figuration, blurring the lines between these various forms and imagery, and through the works you kind of bring them into their own ecology of symbols and motifs through your painting. You kind of already touched on it, but there's imagery of snakes and plants and bodies and birds and kind of some sexual innuendo. Do you want to speak a little bit more on what led you to those specific imageries?
I was working as a gardener. That was the first job I got after I moved back from London to live in Ponaki. I was struggling quite a bit at the time to like connect with the city. And then gardening turned out to just be the best decision ever because I made all these great friends. And it's a very healing practice, gardening. I didn't know much at all about plants at the time. And then I just became very, very plant obsessed. And I'm now, just kind of been learning about so many different herbs, especially I'm interested in because they've got these wealth of knowledge around healing and often women's healing of women's bodies. And then that then became the theme for my exhibition called The Witch's Herbarium. And I made this whole witch's garden around like the herbs, the healing herbs. But then I was more directly depicting herbs using imagery from medieval woodblock prints. So I was using those as references. So there's echoes of that. I liked those images because they were naive but honest, actually, and they showed botanically the way plants work. But it wasn't in,
like an overly scientific way.
Yeah,
more like a like not like necessarily a feeling, but more like you get more of like a personal touch.
Yeah, I think what I liked about them is they had like a human character, and I really like how the depicting the leaves, like their limbs, like their arms and legs.
Yeah.
And then I felt like that depicted my belief in like the consciousness of nature, and that humans are not the only ones to have to experience a form of consciousness, yeah. but actually plants and animals also.
Yeah, so you felt like those older depictions of nature, they've got more like a embodiedness to, or essence.
Yeah, well, I think when I was reading, I actually like, I'm real nerdy and I read into these like old herbariums, and the meanings of the plants are very, they're not just medicinal in the practical sense, like this cures colds. There was a lot of more emotional and protectiveness and access to your ancestors and like the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
And like it went well beyond like how we think of medicine today, like take this for that. Like it was more like the elderberry. If you you can speak to the elderberry and you can access the dead, but you can't. There was a rule like you have to ask it before you harvest it, otherwise you'll go to hell or something like that.
Wow.
Just an example. Yeah.
Yeah. So with using that kind of imagery within your own work, did you want to kind of pull up how those images made you feel, kind of translate that into your own work?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think there's just such a richness in the way that people used to relate to nature. I guess they used to be more when people were really depending on the potato crop for the health of their, for the survival of their family. People would really connect with the plants on a deeper level. And I think we've lost that connection today, and maybe it's like a yearning for like more of a connection to nature. Yeah.
Yeah, like recentering that nature within your painting.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I also wanted to delve a bit into the making process of these works. Do you find yourself heavily planning and sketching the works and their compositions before you approach the canvas, or is it more of a spontaneous intuition approach to the canvas and kind of responding to the work in the moment?
I think for this series of paintings, I actually intentionally didn't plan so much, because I wanted to tap into a more immediate, like being present with the canvas and making decisions more spontaneously. And I think that allows for a looser process and allows the composition to be like less rigid, perhaps. So yeah, I did this residency with APS editions, and I was making a lot of monoprints in this way where you just had to move the ink kind of spontaneously. And
yeah.
I found that process helped me loosen up my practice a little bit. So then I applied that to this series of paintings, just creating in the moment and not planning it out too much.
Yeah, before, would you say you were plan a lot?
Yeah, like the Witch's Herbarium one was all planned out in watercolour. Translated that to oil. It was just a different process and a different result. Yeah.
Yeah, and how did you find that, switching up and kind of fully not putting... I don't know. I guess like putting in faith in that moment with the canvas and
it's
fully,
scary.
You're kind of jumping in head first a bit more.
It's scary because as an artist, you obviously invest a lot in your materials, and so it's hard to be like not precious. And there's a high risk with just going for it. And so there was a lot of rejected paintings, and a lot of those canvases are actually turned inside out. So like there'll be a failed painting, and then and it's actually on the back side of the painting.
Oh,
so I turn it inside out and then use the other side of the canvas. Although it looks like the work might be done quite quickly, Like when you think about the body of work, there's a lot of time put into works that don't work and just allowing failure to happen.
Yeah. I often say, like, I don't know, maybe with more like abstract, fast momentum works, it's like to get that one that you're showing took like, I don't know how many, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like failed attempts, or maybe behind that surface image there's like three kind of like, sometimes there's like, you know what I mean, four paintings in one before you restart and everything. But I think there's something so wonderful about like what then that painting holds, like it holds all those layers and all the energy and all that time and movement of all the other works, and it kind of all layers up with each other.
Yeah.
Even though the audience, like the viewer, might not be able to see that, like it's there in a different capacity.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think that like the repetition of forms became important in having motifs, because when you're doing work spontaneously, you're drawing on all this imagery you have in your like muscle memory.
Yeah, you kind of find your body kind of repeats motifs or movements and things. Hey, it's like your body knows something maybe before your mind intentionally like knows what's going to be happening.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I also wanted to speak to the paint application on your works, because the surfaces are really beautiful. You really allow for this movement in the paint itself, allowing for the brush strokes to remain visible with this wonderful index of painterly materiality showing through, ranging from these washy overlays to harsher lines, with some works really showing this rough texture of the canvas below. Yeah, do you want to speak to me a little bit about this playful approach to paint and kind of stretching out the paint and its kind of, do you know what I mean, as material and, what it's capable of doing?
Yeah. I think, I've been experimenting with different ways of painting, and you always want to be in that mode of experimentation. And I think as soon as you get too comfortable, it's not good anymore. So you always have to not know what you're doing a little bit. Some of the paintings I actually started off using some acrylic, which I hadn't really done before, and building up even some like oil pastel, which can be scratched back into later. I did a little bit of that.
Nice.
And these are all techniques I hadn't really done before. So I was just like figuring out as I go. And I think that keeps it enjoyable for me as well.
Yeah,
like you're never going to be this like art factory because you're always experimenting. I think that allows each work, although they're all green and have similarities, I think the amount of different techniques in each of them makes it quite a varied show, actually.
Yeah, there's something so wonderful in the like letting go of some control or some agency, or giving handing over that agency to the materials and allowing that paint to kind of, maybe in a similar way that you view plants in nature, by letting the material kind of have its own vitality,
but doing its own make decisions for itself. It's like you're asking the paint, what shape do you want to be?
You're like, it's not just this material that I have in my hand and I have complete power over, but it's this thing that has its own, it's like a part of the conversation.
Can I take that full circle and say it's a spiritual idea of the almighty? If you have an idea that God is almighty, then beauty is precise and controlled. But if you have the idea that God is in nature, then it's like beauty is in the wild and like tangly.
Oh,
and
nice.
Like sorry, I was just getting real deep with that idea.
Wonderful. And my last question for you, what are your hopes for viewers engaging with the work?
I hope they have like an immediate enjoyment. I think good artwork, it has, you know, like Louise Bourgeois's show at the Auckland Art Gallery at the moment, it has this immediate appeal to the body, and it's very, has this familiarity. But then as you, you know, if people are more interested, they can discover more, you know, as well, and maybe even read the piece of writing.
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately, I want it to have that immediate kind of appealing quality.
That was Rosa Ellison speaking to me about Veriditas, which is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 2nd of May.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
We'll be right back with your arts guide. Keep it on the beat. You're listening to Various Artists.
Put my arms around you. It's down. Mysterious Artists.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists. It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tāmaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Grace Aotearoa is now open at their new location on Simon Street at Rationless House. You can check out their current joint exhibition showing Aotearangi Anderson and Georgia Tikaputini Douglas Hood, Mo Ahua, on until the 9th of May.
Also mentioned on the show, Vera Ditas is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 2nd of May.
Lucia Sidonio's solo exhibition, Internal Rumours, is on at Stark White until the 25th of April.
Zach Landon Pohl's Caterpillar Soup is on at Let Thomas Gallery until the 18th of April.
Olivia Asher's solo exhibition, Upon a Fragile Plane, is on view at Uxbridge's Malcolm Smith Gallery until the 9th of May.
Desert Island by Anto Yaldizian is on at Coastal Signs until the 18th of April.
End Grained by Martino Gampa is on at Object Space until the 31st of May.
Amon Na Kuru, Telltale, A Dog is on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary until the 17th of May.
Dreaming From Afar, a group show exhibiting Brunel Diaz Prims, Gian Manic and Tyrone Tewa is on at Gus Fisher Gallery until the 2nd of May.
And Day to Day by Kate Small is on at Anna Miles Gallery until the 18th of April. If you have something you want on the Arts Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95 BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi katoa, koutou katoa I koro mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Emil Sheffman.
And Rosa Ellison.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi kia koutou I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or you can check out our Instagram at 95bfmvariousartists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Soph.
I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95 BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.